WVW Broadcast Network and The New American are pleased to present The New American TV. This broadcast is committed to helping you understand the truth behind the news. Now, here's your host, Paul Dragoo.
Welcome to The New American TV, where we bring you the truth behind the news. Today's Friday, April 14th, and we're dedicating this episode to the transgender insanity and its unbelievably sinister end goal, transhumanism. Let's dive right in. Every day, Americans are assaulted by psychological warfare demanding that they accept transgenderism. But there's more to it than that. There's a diabolical agenda to convince people of the moral and ethical superiority of doing away with the reality of human biology. The argument is that biology and personal identity are not connected. According to trans ideology, your identity has nothing to do with your body. The idea that the mind is separate from the body and that the human body is largely irrelevant is not just the underlying idea of transgenderism, it's also the idea behind transhumanism. While many transgender activists may not know it, transgenderism is just a stepping stone to transhumanism. Transhumanism is the idea that the mind can be severed from the body and that biological human reality can and should be entirely transformed, transcended, and ultimately rendered extinct. You may have heard of Sirius XM satellite radio. You may even have a subscription. Satellite radio was a remarkable invention. Sirius was founded by Martin Rothblatt, who came out as transgender in 1994 as Martine. Perhaps not as well known as some inventors, Rothblatt has had a long career in developing and commercializing sophisticated technologies, and not just in satellite communications. When Rothblatt's young daughter was diagnosed with pulmonary hypertension, despite having no training in biology or medicine, he began working to develop a cure for the deadly disease. This campaign was a success, and Rothblatt is now founder, CEO, and director of United Therapeutics, a biotech firm with annual revenues of nearly $2 billion. Rothblatt is not as well known as some enthusiastic transhumanist futurists. Most well known is perhaps Ray Kurzweil, and with good reason. Having had a long career as a successful inventor and computer scientist, in 2012, Google co-founder Larry Page hired him to work on advanced technologies at Google. He is known for predicting that computers will achieve human levels of intelligence by 2029 and that humans will merge with artificial intelligence as a result. He expanded on these points during an interview in 2017.
I've been consistent that by 2029, computers will achieve human levels of intelligence. They already can do things greater than humans in certain areas, like play Go and recognize images better than humans, but they'll have the wide range of human intelligence and in particular really understand language at human levels by 2029. But my scenario for how we're going to use that is we're going to merge with it. We don't have one or two AIs in the world today. We have billions of them, and they are brain
extensions. They could create an army.
That's the usual depiction. What's actually happening is they are empowering all of us. They're making us smarter. They may not yet be inside our brains and bodies. That will happen by the 2030s. We'll connect our neocortex, the part of our brain where we do our thinking, to the cloud.
Kurzweil pointed out in the same interview that most people don't notice these massive technological shifts until it's too late.
But these things creep up on us. They get more and more powerful. It's not like one day we wake up and suddenly we're connected to the cloud. It'll happen, you know, in many steps, each of which seems benign, but then we look back and see how different the situation is.
This describes exactly what has been happening and continues to happen with the transition from transgender to transhumanism. In 2011, Martine Rothblatt wrote the book From Transgender to Transhumanism, describing the direct relationship between transgenderism and transhumanism. According to Rothblatt in that book, advanced technological instruments taught us that people are born with a continuum, not a duality, of sexual biomarkers such as reproductive system morphology, hormonal endocrinology, and cerebral neurology. Surgical and pharmaceutical technology enables body modification into a transgendered realm, end quote. Rothblatt continued, arguing that technology development would not stop at transgenderism. Quote, Sex lies at the heart of biology, and yet in transcending biology, technology gave us an explosion of sexual identities. So, as technology continues to transcend biology, what next can we expect? An explosion of human identities? The answer, in a word, is transhumanism, end quote. To the transhumanist, the end goal is to completely free the individual mind, identity, from any biological anchor, or even to reality. The connection to transgenderism as a result is obvious. Transgenderism seeks to sever all ties of individual identity to biological sex. To the committed transhuman, this is a half measure at best, merely a step on the way to full liberation from biological humanity. As a result, transhumanists like Ray Kurzweil envision a time arriving sometime between 2030 and 2045 when biology becomes irrelevant, something he explained at the Global Future 2045 conference held in New York 10 years ago.
Well, we're going to become increasingly non-biological to the point where the non-biological part predominates and the biological part is not that important anymore. In fact, the non-biological part, the machine part, will be so powerful it can completely model and understand the biological part. So even if that biological part went away, it wouldn't make any difference because the non-biological part already understood it completely. We'll also have non-biological bodies. We can create bodies with nanotechnology. We can create virtual bodies in virtual reality. The virtual reality will be as realistic as real reality. The virtual bodies will be as detailed and convincing as real bodies.
For Rothblatt, achieving something like the future envisioned by Kurzweil might be achieved soon by uploading something called mind files.
What we're working on is creating a situation where people can create a mind file. And a mind file is the collection of their mannerisms, personality, recollection, feelings, beliefs, attitudes, and values, everything that we pour today into Google, into Amazon, into Facebook. And all of this information stored there will be able, in the next couple decades, once software is able to recapitulate consciousness, be able to revive the consciousness which is imminent in our mind file.
Would it be possible to reawaken a mind file to a state of consciousness? Even if possible in theory, would you be present in the mind file? Would the awakened mind file even be human? Ray Kurzweil described something like creating a digital representation of a mind file of his father in an interview with Lexi Fridman.
Let me describe one thing I've already done with my father.
That's a great story.
So we created technology. This is public. Came out, I think, 6 years ago, where you could ask any question. And the release product, which I think is still on the market, it would read 200,000 books and then find the one sentence in 200,000 books that best answered your question. But I was also able to take it and not go through 200,000 books, but go through a book that I put together, which is basically everything my father had written. So everything he had written, I had gathered, and we created a book, everything that Frederick Kurzweil had written. Now, I didn't think this actually would work that well because stuff he'd written was stuff about how to lay out. I mean, he did directed choral groups and music groups, and he would be laying out how the people should, where they should sit and how to fund this and all kinds of things that really didn't seem that interesting. And yet, when you ask a question, it would go through it and it would actually give you a very good answer. So I said, well, you know, who's the most interesting composer? And he said, well, definitely Brahms. And he would go on about how Brahms was fabulous and talk about the importance of music education. And
so you could have
have a conversation with him, which was actually more interesting than talking to him, because if you talk to him, he'd be concerned about how they're going to lay out this property to give a choral group.
You'd be concerned about the day-to-day versus the big questions.
Exactly, yeah.
This is a compelling outcome and a significant achievement, but it doesn't amount to resurrection, the achievement of immortality, or the reanimation of Ray Kurzweil's father. It's just a searchable archive of the elder Kurzweil's writings. It's an advanced equivalent of looking through a dead relative's journal. Even in the near future, perhaps very near future, when such digitized works might be combined with a sampled deepfake avatar and the voice of the deceased, the person will not have been reawakened to new life, will not be self-aware, will not be able to love others, and will not be able to have any of the many deep experiences of real life. To believe otherwise would be delusional, but this hasn't discouraged committed transhumanists. In 2013, Martin Rothblatt contributed to a chapter on this topic to the Transhumanist Reader, a collection published by Wiley Blackwell, an influential publisher of academic texts and peer-reviewed journals. In a chapter titled Mind is Deeper Than Matter, Rothblatt discusses the idea that a mind could exist in software just as well as in flesh and blood. As the mind files become increasingly complete, Rothblatt wrote, the software-based mind will become ever closer to the flesh-based mind, end quote. In keeping with other transhumanists, Rothblatt believes that this will be one part of a three-part strategy necessary to achieve immortality.
I like trying to pursue the three bridges of radical life extension, which are, first of all, to use supplementation to try to reprogram aspects of my body which are degrading, and then secondly, to do all that I can to pave the way forward for biotechnology and nanotechnology to extend our lives yet further, and then finally, to pursue full mind uploading to ensure that we have freedom from whatever the happenstance may occur to a single body. I think it's really important to get to the point of one mind, multiple bodies as rapidly as possible. With regard to supplementation, I'm a follower of the Fantastic Voyage regimens of nutritional supplementation. With regard to biotechnology and nanotechnology, I started a biotechnology company, United Therapeutics, to save the life of my youngest daughter. And it's come out to be true, and her life and thousands of other people's lives have been saved through that biotechnology. So it's a proof positive of the second bridge to technological immortality. With regard to nanotechnology, our company sponsors a conference every year on nanomedical and telemedical technology. And the goal of this conference is for it to become a networking opportunity to expedite the point in time when our bodies can be infused with medical nanobots, which can communicate with each other and with computers outside the body wirelessly to attack any medical problems. And then finally, I've established a nonprofit foundation, the TerraSem Foundation, whose goal is mind loading or uploading and downloading our consciousness from our flesh mind to computer substrate, where it can be safe and replicated and deployed ultimately throughout the cosmos.
And there you have it. Straight from the mind of one of the most influential technologists, innovators, and transgender transhumanist theorists. The end goal of transgenderism is technological immortality. Is this even possible? Stay tuned, because after the break, my colleague Dennis Barrett, whose book Endgame takes a deep dive into this topic, will join me to discuss this.
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the Singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code N20, END20.
Welcome back. Joining me is Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine and the author of Endgame, COVID, and the Dark State Quest for Biodigital Convergence in a Transhumanist World. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for coming on. And that title always gets me, man. So what do you think? Are we about to achieve immortality through all this technology that we just watched being mentioned in there?
Well, I don't want to skip to the end, but I will anyway. The answer is no. We are not about to achieve immortality. Despite all the hype, and there is a dramatic hype cycle around this in some circles, and that is, you know, the technology is advancing so quickly. The law of accelerated returns, as Ray Kurzweil has put it in his many works over the past 20 years, that the technology is advancing so quickly and in a geometric fashion that we are inevitably going to reach this point. And yes, while the technology, in my opinion, is indeed advancing exactly as quickly as Ray Kurzweil and others point out, despite the fact that it's doing that, it doesn't mean that the achievement of immortality via technology is even possible. And I think you made a good point in the run-up to this where we're talking in saying that, you know, despite the fact that you may be able to upload a simulacrum of a person's thoughts via a mind file, for instance, that's just a fancy journal. It's just a fancy written diary that maybe can be read back by a Siri-like a voice-enabled chatbot, and it can give the impression of a person. But it's not you. It's not a person. It's not your father. It's not your mother. It's not you if you choose to do it yourself. It's not self-aware. It can never be aware of its surroundings. It's just no different than a paper diary at a new technological level. So, no, I don't think that this technology can achieve immortality. But what I do think is that important people with a great deal of influence who have done a lot of work in the space themselves and are investing a large amount of money, and I said the hype cycle already, the hype cycle is real. You can see it in the wide-ranging discussions of how AI might be used at company after company after company that's going on right now. This is driving a tremendous amount of investment, and so people believe that it's real. And the most important thing is what people believe, because their beliefs inform their actions. And this is something I wrote about in Endgame. You know, the types of policy end results that we see don't just come out of the blue because someone thought about something one day. Mm-hmm. They're because people believe that certain things will happen, and then they craft forward-looking policies as a result. And so I think that we're going to be seeing, and we already really are seeing, forward-looking policies and behaviors even crafted in response to expectations about what AI and what technological immortality might look like. And those things are coming to us right now. And, you know, I like to say, it's come up a couple times in conversation. People have asked me, where are we with regard to what Ray Kurzweil has called the singularity? Are we there yet? Yeah. When will we get there? And my answer has been, we're not past the singularity yet, but we're circling the event horizon, and we may no longer be able to come back from it. We are reaching a point where not only is the technology advancing, but the belief in the technology has advanced to such a point that we are going to have to deal with the consequences of those beliefs, whether we want to or not.
Well, I want to go back to those consequences, but I want to go back to the mind files, this digital journal versus being. And this, I think, is the foundational question, or not the foundational, it's a difference, I would think, between those who think that, you know, humans, we're all just, this is just matter, versus those of us who believe that there's more to humanity than just our memories, right? So if they think that you can just upload yourself and live forever, they're obviously not taking the rest of what makes you, of, you know, I know you're a Catholic and you know, I'm a Christian too. And so we look at it and there's you know, the Bible talks about three aspects of humanity, right? There's obviously the flesh, there's the soul and the spirit. Obviously they take no consideration of that. So it's a matter of, what makes a human being? Are these people, I don't know, do you know, are they all atheists or humanists, whatever we call them, materialists?
Well, I think that there are a group of them who are atheists. I think they're committed atheists in many cases. They believe because there is no God, there is no salvation. It's just whatever we experience in this life, and then it's over. And that may motivate some of them to pursue some other solution.
Right.
That, you know, we don't have any kind of spiritual afterlife. It's over when we die. What can we do to prevent that from happening? And becomes a desperate attempt at life extension. Certainly there's some of that going on, for sure. But there's also, I think, a group who are in rebellion to God. And in that sense, they're believers. They're very strong believers. They're very religious in a sense, although it's a sort of a counterpoint to traditional belief. And that counterpoint is this: they resent a God. They resent a creator who can create and direct life and intervene if he so chooses, even, you know, whether or not you believe that happens a lot or not. But they literally resent a controlling force in the universe that has that level of power, and they seek what they believe to be liberation, not only from the biological reality that we exist in, but also from the very idea of a creator God that controls the universe. That is the liberation they seek, and so they want to rebuild some sort of alternative salvation to what has been proposed by the world's major religions. Yeah. And so that's direct rebellion against God from the point of view of religious believers.
Well, humans have always sought some sort of a fountain of youth or, you know, anything to keep us from dying. Now, going back, it's like we've been heavy on the transhumanist aspect, because I think this is obviously, you know, we're saying this is where it's going, but and obviously this would be speculative on your part, but the transgender crowd, I look at the transgender crowd and I can't imagine those people know much of anything, especially about what this is really about. Do you happen to have any idea about, you know, the groups that are pushing? Because obviously there's a push, there's money being funneled through various, from people with money, through activism, through, I don't know if the ACLU is involved or whatnot. What is your thought on how much of this do they even know? From the top to obviously the soldiers on the ground, I imagine they don't know any of this.
I think from the top, some people certainly know. Martine Rothblatt is very well-known technologist, inventor, business leader, very influential. There are people at the top who certainly know Rothblatt's thinking.
Do we know if, for instance, Martine is funding the transgender movement to some degree through some avenues?
That I don't actually know. The direct link to funding, I don't know. I don't think we would be surprised.
Yeah, if that's the case.
But the most important thing is conditioning. It really doesn't matter if the roots level transgender movement really understands the idea behind the connection to transhumanism. Doesn't matter. What's most important is the conditioning of the entire population to the idea that we can and should sever any kind of link between, you know, logical link between mind and body, between our desire and our physical reality, our biological reality. The whole idea is to condition the population, primarily the American population, or at least the Western European population, and the American population, that this is not only something we can do, but it's morally right to do it. It's the next ethical step that mankind must take. Well, in order to get to wide acceptance of transhumanism, which is, you know, easily criticized as, you know, revolting, you know, because it really positions attempts to paint a picture of human extinction as a good thing.
Right.
So obviously any normal person is going to look at that and say, well, we can't do that. That's horrible. We don't want to do that. So we have to condition the entire population to accept the idea that we should transition away from biological reality.
The environmentalists are doing that too, right?
Oh, yeah. This is exactly, you know, this is broad-based around the entire, well, let me put it this way. A writer on Substack, his name is Chris Bray, made a really good point recently. And he pointed out that this is, in the transgender realm, it's just one more example, one more permutation of the exact same crisis which we've seen with COVID and with regard to several other crises. It's the crisis of the revolt against reality. That's exactly what we're seeing. You know, going back, Bray's point with COVID was that most of the policies we saw made no sense. I pointed that out in Endgame. It made no sense. Mm-hmm. It was a revolt against reality to achieve some end that otherwise reality wouldn't have been permissive of.
Right.
And that's exactly what transgenderism is doing. And it's all, in my opinion, and I think you can see the connection with Martine Rothblatt here, who makes the connection obvious from her point of view. The whole idea is to transcend biology, make it acceptable, and beyond that, make not only make it acceptable, but make it something that's demanded by the population, that that's the next thing we must do.
Yeah. Well, so let's come back full circle. It sounds like that's where we were going anyway. Consequences. We were, you know, that's, is the ultimate consequence the extinction of humanity? And what are some consequences before that? Because I don't think we're getting there. I don't think we're getting there. So what are the consequences that we're dealing with today and I guess in policy? And I feel like I actually already know the answer. We're seeing the consequence, right?
We're seeing chaos in
our culture. Would you like to add to that?
Well, driving to the office this morning, I have the morning news on, and I hear a story. And it's a young mother, and she receives a phone call about her daughter from a kidnapper. And the kidnapper had used a sample of the voice of her 15-year-old daughter to create an AI deep fake of a kidnapping situation and demanded, you know, some sum of money from the mother for the safe return of her daughter. And if her daughter isn't returned to her, they're going to, you know, do these terrible things to her and then drop her off in Mexico somewhere.
Yeah.
And then she's, of course, panicked about this. She calls her daughter's cell phone. Her daughter's not home because her daughter's out on a trip somewhere, you know, teenage daughter on a trip with her friends, whatever. And her daughter picks up and like, yeah, I'm fine. This is entirely a deep fake situation. Mm. That's being used, but you know, using AI to create a deep fake. So there's the crisis of reality hitting home in an American household. This is severing lived experience from reality. Now we see that again. There's a recent example with the Joe Rogan podcast. I just saw this today as well. Here's another thing popping up today. There's a Joe Rogan podcast episode which is entirely, completely fake. It's entirely AI. It features Joe Rogan interviewing the head of OpenAI, Sam Altman. There's neither Joe Rogan nor Sam Altman. The entire thing is 100% deepfake via AI. It's, again, we're looking here at the crisis of reality.
It's an assault on reality.
It's an assault on reality.
Wow. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you so much. And I'll say it again, like I said, every time I have you on, get this book. Thank you very much for all you've done.
Thank you, Paul.
And stay tuned, folks, because after this, we're going to have a panel discussion about whether things are getting better or worse. We'll be right back.
I certainly would not want a constitutional convention. I mean, whoa. Who knows what would come out of that?
Just imagine if we have a constitutional convention, the number of people who will be unhappy and the number of people who say the results are not valid, and then they'll just ignore the entire Constitution.
What we need are just more people that would read the one we have.
It isn't the Constitution that's the problem. It is the people who ignore the Constitution that usurp power and abuse the constitutional power that they ostensibly have.
If you can't enforce an existing piece of paper, how are you going to enforce a piece of paper that has a little more writing to it? In other words, it's been amended.
It's up to us to hold our elected officials accountable.
What can you do to elect good representatives and senators in your state legislature who understand the Constitution and are willing to take a stand?
Imprisonment, forced labor, permanent separation from my family, perhaps death. I knew what could happen to people who were caught trying to defect, but the watchtowers stood yards away. The possibility of a new life in a different world, one without tyranny, was within sight. The West. I thought of the rewards no longer crushed under the boot of communism. I would work and make money, no longer restrained by the chains of collectivism. I would say what I wanted, without fear of spies and informants nearby. I would be free. The frozen rain and Romanian mud seeped through my gloves and cloths. I fantasized about a fire burning in the wood stove of my parents' home. But I pushed those thoughts from my mind, closed my eyes, and waited for the cover of the darkness.
Get Defector, A True Story of Tyranny, Liberty, and Purpose by Mark Hobovkovich with Paul Dragoo. A thrilling page-turner that will remind you how precious yet vulnerable freedom is. Available at shopjbs.org or Amazon. For a limited time, get 20% off your entire order using promo code DEFECTOR20 when you purchase Defector at shopjbs.org.
Welcome back. Are things getting better or are they getting worse? That's the question my colleagues and I will kick around for the next half hour. Let me introduce the fellas. So we got Gary Benoit, editor-in-chief of The New American, Steve Bonta, the executive senior editor of The New American, and managing editor of The New American, John Larrabell. Well, gentlemen, I know this is a topic we actually have discussion off camera here and there, and so let's talk about it on camera. Gary, why don't you start off? Are things getting better or worse?
If you look strictly at the politics, you would have to say that things are getting worse. But I'm really encouraged because there are other things that are happening that over a longer term are going to make things better. And I'm referring first and foremost to the Great Awakening. The fact that so many people now can see that there is a fundamental problem in this country. The fact that people really are waking up and they're looking for us. They're really looking for something like the John Birch Society in order to organize it and save their freedoms. And over time, I think that's going to make the difference. And of course, there are other things too, such as the blossoming homeschooling movement. The fact that parents recognize more than ever, the fact that the public schools, the government schools are beyond repair, and they're pulling their kids out of the schools. And the kids who are now being brought up outside those government schools, many of them, I believe, will become, as they grow up, part of the vanguard of the freedom movement.
What do you think, Steve?
Well, I think we need to frame, before we get too far into this discussion, we need to frame what we mean by things. So, I mean, if you're talking about the advance of science and technology, we're unquestionably getting better. I mean, even dental care is better than when I was a kid. Dental care is so good now that they apply painkillers before they apply the painkillers. Yeah. It's great. Yeah. So, you know, and medicine, despite the cost. So there's a lot of cool stuff happening. The prospects for, space exploration. I'm kind of a space geek at heart. Mm-hmm. A lot of what's going on. I mean, the internet is an amazing, I won't say an unalloyed good, but there's a lot of good to it. There are a lot of amazing things that it's done, that it's accomplished. I've always been kind of a nerdy type, you'll be shocked to hear. And when I was a kid, you had to use old-fashioned card catalogs and magazines and newspapers and things like that to try to glean information, whereas now an information junkie like me can just surf the web all day. So it's a good time to be alive for a lot of people. If you mean things geographically, I mean, in many parts of the world, you know, standard of living has improved and perhaps may continue to do so. It's been an awfully long time since there's been a major famine. I'm old enough to remember the great famines in Africa in the 90s and 80s and so forth. It used to be another thing. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of grounds for optimism there. Now, I think we all sort of understand that by things we mean political and moral things, the kinds of stuff that we like to talk about, you know, regarding liberty specifically. What are the prospects going forward for liberty in the United States? And that is a much more vexed question, to be sure. I think on the positive side, Gary mentioned homeschooling, for example, which is, again, this is a new thing under the sun. When I was a little kid, my parents sent me to something called a free school, which way back in the 70s, before homeschooling was even legal, was sort of a precursor to that. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I gained a whole lot. I only went for 1 year. But nevertheless, homeschooling is a very, very significant change. The amazing changes in gun laws, which have taken place, and it seems to be, just accelerate. I'll let John talk about it. It's been accelerating in recent years. Let's see. Let's get away from that then. How about what we're seeing in Congress? I mean, we've been talking about this a lot since the elections last fall. I mean, it wasn't so long ago that there were one or two people on all of Capitol Hill who, from our perspective, were the voices of sanity and reason and limited government and the Constitution and all that. Ron Paul, for example, he's probably the outstanding example. And now we've got literally dozens of Ron Paul mini-me's running amok in the House, creating all kinds of havoc in the good sense of the word. And these are all very healthy trends. I mean, obviously, we've got a long way to go. Now, are things getting better in the moral sense? This is a more complicated question because, even when I was young, already the so-called sexual revolution, which started in the 60s, was well underway by the 70s, which was the time when I was a boy and then became a teenager. And these things were already, appalling. It had already become fashionable to denigrate old-fashioned morality, shows like All in the Family with Archie Bunker and this sort of thing. Even back in the 70s, we're already, the mindset was similar to what we have today, only today it's a lot more radicalized. But on the other hand, so the moral decay is very evident. Yeah. And the aggressiveness with which those who seek to tear down our civilization, uproot it, is never been more obvious. Right. But by the same token, I think that has strengthened the resolve and, as we like to say, maybe red-pilled lots of people who are coming to realize that you can't just sort of coast through your life anymore, that freedom and in the larger sense, our Western Christian civilization are things that we have to fight for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think, John?
I think it's getting better and it's getting worse.
There are.
No, things are definitely, in some ways we can see things getting worse, for sure. The attacks by the left and how egregious some of this stuff is becoming, the almost this vitriol and this anger, among a lot of leftists in the media and in culture and even in government and how they're going after a previous president, a former president trying to indict him. It's probably not going to go anywhere, but, it's happening. And we're seeing it kind of rise to a certain level that we haven't seen before. However, as Steve and Gary pointed out, in some ways things are getting a lot better as well.
Yeah.
As far as the homeschooling movement, several decades ago, that wasn't really even a thing. And now it's getting a lot bigger, and it has gotten a lot bigger. It's probably continuing to grow. Now you see them trying to stop it in
they're gonna be
any ways they
it.
Can. They, mm-hmm. Well, they're already doing that, but it's continuing to grow, and that's definitely a good thing. And as Gary pointed out, you said that people who are being homeschooled now, once they get out, are going to be a lot more freedom and liberty minded, and that's definitely a good thing. As far as Steve mentioned, gun rights and gun ownership. I mean, again, a few decades ago, a lot of people didn't own semi-automatic rifles. Now that's like the new cool gun to have now, and been that way for a while. And they're so popular now that Americans, I think, are more well armed than ever.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
The tens of millions of these guns out there, there's just no way they could take them all. And we're seeing improvements in gun laws.
And we have
concealed carry, constitutional carry laws.
26 states, yes. Right?
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable. It wasn't that long ago. I think you couldn't even conceal carry in Wisconsin, I believe.
It's the majority of the states, actually.
26. Yeah. Couldn't conceal carry at all, but now constitutional carry is getting more common. Yeah. And, I think there's definitely a lot of positive development in that aspect as well with the gun rights. And I think, too, with the media, we're seeing the liberal media get really, really bad. So egregious. True. But, on the other hand, you have to remember back in, before my time, but several decades ago, in the 60s and 70s, that's really all there was. Now we have a lot of alternative media. It kind of started with Fox News in the 90s, but that's not even that great. But now we're seeing with the internet, the kind of alternative media we have, we're an example of that at New American. That's growing and getting so big right now, giving an alternative voice to so many millions of people to get the message out there. And of course, again, they want to censor that too, deplatform us. But
They're no longer the gatekeepers.
No, exactly. Yeah. So in that sense too,
and that's a good thing, right?
That's a very good thing. So there are a lot of positives going on too. So it's not, I don't think it's good to be so negative and it's time to go run for the hills and grab your guns and groceries and go hunker in a bunker. There are definitely positive things.
They'll find you.
Hunker in a bunker. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny that this is going this way because when we report the news, it's kind of pretty depressing. And so I'm actually going to roll back to some of that because I agree with lots of these, and these are parts of the points that we've already had. But for instance, one of the news stories we had reported earlier is the conviction of Sergeant Perry in Texas.
And that happened by a jury that is clearly moronic. I don't know how, you know, but so I think that's worse now, because we have a populace that doesn't know what freedom should be, what it should look like. And here we have a perfect example of someone employing self-defense, that firearm, who now could end up in jail. You know, so that's, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, if I had a nickel for every time a jury came out with an inane cockamamie verdict. Yeah.
OJ?
I would be very, yeah, sure. I mean, this is not a new thing, to
okay,
be
well,
sure.
That's yeah. reassuring.
And particularly, I mean, remember that the venue was Austin, Texas, which is sort of an
yeah.
island of yes. lunacy in the midst of an otherwise sane, respectable red state, mm-hmm. probably the reddest of them all, right? Anyway, so if, at least if the Babylon Bee is to be believed.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's that. But there is a, you know, there is a problem. It does seem to me that we're becoming more and more and more separated into these mm-hmm. two moieties, you know. Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, we have our moiety, which is, you know, those who've been, we like to say, red-pilled or some such, you know, who are...
Let's keep saying that, because the FBI is...
We should. I know. The FBI is... Gonna,
it's yeah. a bad word now.
Maybe yeah. they'll learn some. We could red-pill the FBI.
Yes, yes. Well, there's a whole bunch of
either
words
or the lights will go out.
But anyway, but yeah, so we're becoming more and more resolute and more, you know, better and better educated. But on the other hand, it seems to me that the ignorance, the yeah. obduracy, mm-hmm. and the outright hatred and intolerance that mm-hmm. is manifest now is nothing like what it used to be on the so-called, I mean, if you want an idea of what much of the so-called American left used to be like, circa 40, 50 years ago, look no further than, say, Alan Dershowitz.
Yeah.
Somebody like that, right? Okay, so Alan Dershowitz or Tulsi Gabbard or somebody like mm-hmm. that, you know, these are people.
Or Robert Kennedy Jr.?
Possibly, I don't know. You know, but these people, they've honest disagree, and we'll argue with them and we'll debate the points, but there's a certain tolerance. You know, the watchword used to be, I may disagree with what you say, mm-hmm. but I will defend to the death your right to say it. Yeah. And obviously that has long since been forgotten, set aside by the woke generation, and not yeah. even not just by the people that are donning the black bandanas and going out and, you know, burning police cars and assaulting people, you know, but by students on college campuses who refuse to let people of dissenting viewpoints speak. Now, I just read this afternoon that apparently Harvard University, of all places, at the instigation of Steven Pinker and a couple of other high profile academics, is in the process of setting up some sort of a council that will be consecrated to the strict observance of freedom of speech.
Mm. Yeah.
And this actually attracted the attention of the Wall Street Journal. Their reaction was similar to mine, which was, it's a good idea, kudos to them if they're serious, if they actually do it,
right.
but we'll believe it when we see it kind
yeah,
of thing.
Exactly.
So,
right,
so
right. We've seen that. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Here's the news, Dad.
Is it, son? Is it?
What about this one, Dad?
Nope. It's hard to tell what's real and what's fake these days. There's just too much baloney out there. At the New American, they cut through the baloney and give me the truth.
The truth is hard to find, but the New American has it. Check it out at thenewamerican.com.
Hi, I'm Alan Keyes. I'm the host of IMTV's daily talk show about news and events in America. And I want to say a good word for the New American magazine. Not only because Alex Newman has joined us as somebody who is periodically hosting a show, but because New American magazine represents a alternative media that is willing to tell people the truth. With so much fake news spreading about, and the fact that right now this country is in an existential crisis, we remember who we are and where we come from and what our principles are, or we die. Reading New American magazine can keep you up to the minute on the issues that are challenging us as a people and on which that survival hangs. You can check it out and subscribe at www.thenewamerican.com.
Welcome back. I'm here with the editorial team from the New American magazine, and we are discussing whether things are getting better or worse. So we're going to go back. And, you know, guys, one of the things I want to touch on and kind of go back on is that Gary mentioned this awakening. And I think that's one of the, you know, even in the midst of all this bad news, I don't want us to overlook this awakening. There's so much news now. You know, you have the former president of the United States who's going around and he's talking about, first he was talking about the deep state, and now he's talking about this this globalist attempt or this coup at a globalist attempt for a world government. So that's really good news, right? I mean, in a way, it kind of looks bad. But I think, you know, what we're feeling is the shaking of the system and of people realizing what's going on.
It's really good news that it's so much out in the open. Mm. And I should mention that I've been involved in the freedom movement for a long time. I joined the John Birch Society in 1968. And at that time, you try to tell people that there is a conspiracy for global control and that communism was just a part of a bigger conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And that the biggest danger was not fallout, it was sellout, and that it emanated not as much from Beijing or Moscow as it did from New York City or London or Paris or Washington, D.C. People would think you're crazy. And so it was very hard. But in more recent years, it has become so obvious. It's become so apparent. I wonder, Paul, if the word conspiracy even fits anymore.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we should call it an OPEC conspiracy, but people can see it.
They
can
call it a plan.
Right.
An evil plan.
Yeah, which is what it is. But they can see that their freedoms are endangered, and people are waking up, and they're waking up in large numbers.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is going to make the difference.
Yeah.
It's become part of, like, the public conversation now.
Exactly.
You
know?
Yeah.
It's really common, right? Like, you know, I don't know anyone who doesn't know. I had a friend over. He's not exactly into this kind of stuff. You know, he's just... I grew up with him. He's an engineer from Atlanta, and I had him over for dinner. He was visiting, and I started talking to him about this stuff, and I used the word conspiracy, and mm-hmm. he's like, well, it's not really a conspiracy. It's kind of out in the open. They're out there saying it, and, you know, again, some people, they look at it, and they say, well, they're so brazen because they're almost done. They almost got the system up. And I remember watching an interview with G. Edward Griffin some time ago, and he was talking about how we have this totalitarian, like it's right there in the wings. And at the time, people were like, what are you talking about? It may have been in the 90s, early 2000s. And he's like, the system is up. It's just, you know, it's just a matter of removing whatever, the bushes out of the way, and there it is.
The scaffolding is in place, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You know, so Gary can relate. I'm an optimist. I think that's a good thing. You know, the question is, are we going to win? If you ask Steve Bannon, apparently we are, you know.
Right.
You know.
Well, I think we are. And, you know, the key is to do what is right and to do what is right because it is right and for no other reason. And if enough of us do that and if enough of us work hard as well as pray hard, I think God will bless our efforts and bless this country as God has done in the past.
Yeah. We had mentioned, you know, this concern about the population not seeing and recognizing and valuing liberty. I wanted to mention one thing because we have a mass exodus from a lot of blue states mm-hmm. into mm-hmm. red states. And that tells a different story, right? That tells that these people value freedom, right? Because No? Steve? All right, go on, Steve.
Well, there is this phenomenon that's known indelicately as Californication, which is what happens when the leftists who wreck California become aghast and say, oh, we can't live here anymore. There are too many taxes. Prices are too high. It's in time. And they move to Arizona and Utah and Colorado and New Mexico Texas, and Nevada
Montana,
and Texas.
And Idaho.
And they start and then they meet, oh, well, these people here, they're so backward. They're so primeval. We've got to, you know, to enlighten them just like we were back in California or in the case of the Northeast, you know, Massachusetts or whatever. And so they become refugees. But they bring with them the same mindset and support for the same policies that created the conditions that drove them out in the first place.
Yeah.
So that's but that said, though, there are a lot of people, based people. There's another word.
Another FBI.
Hear that FBI? Based.
Yeah, when you come up, you got to mention.
Anyway, based people who are moving out of these horrible blue states in the left coast and the Northeast and so forth. And they're fleeing to the likes of Texas and Tennessee and Florida, and I certainly cannot blame them.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And not only for political freedom, those are also the states where you can actually make money. Low taxes. Some of them have no income tax.
No state income tax.
Yeah. Right. No state income tax. My goodness. I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, want to start a business, why wouldn't you want to move to a Tennessee or a Florida or a Texas or something like that?
Yeah. But what is that going to – I mean, like we had touched on earlier, now we're becoming a nation like there's such a wide chasm between between the types of people, and that's not a good thing. Right. I mean, we're becoming different.
Well, in a sense, it's not a good thing. But what if you had a population where everybody believed the way many people in California do? That would be a worse thing, would it not? The reason you had this developing gap between blue and red is because there are people who are going in the side of patriotism and the side of support of the Constitution, love of country and so forth. And so we have this base, and all we need to do is fuel it and get more people involved.
Based.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think people, part of that awakening, going back to the awakening, people are realize. Actually, I don't know. Maybe I'll ask you guys. What do you guys think? Are people, are these infringements, these so overt attacks on liberties that we thought as Americans we would never see, especially with COVID, is awakening them up? Or is it just partially, you know, it's kind of jogging in, but then they're like, oh, we'll go back to normal. Is this going to be a lasting effect? What do you think, John?
Well, hopefully. Right? I think with some people, you always see kind of a spectrum, you know.
Yeah.
I think with some people, it'll just be, you know, they get riled up for a little bit, but then once it goes away, they calm back down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of, you see that a lot in, you know, tyrannical governments that are on the world, you know, the people get angry about something and then they stop and okay, we're fine again now. But I think some people will definitely get awakened and stay that way. You know, it's definitely a cultural shift we're seeing, you know, like almost a reaction to how extreme the left has gotten, how radical it is. And you're seeing it even among young people, you'll see them pull away from it. You know, like you're seeing this whole, like the LGBT and like this feminization of young men, but then you see this reaction even among some of the younger guys, the Gen Zers, where, you know, talking about Chads, you know, there's another word.
Yeah.
A Chad.
What is it?
You don't want to be feminine, you want to be a Chad, you know,
and
lift the weights and everything. And you're seeing a lot of guys get into that now.
Yeah.
You know, almost as like a reaction to how the whole woke culture is getting, you know.
Yeah, because I think there was this slow march to feminizing men, and now it's gotten so bad where men are going around in dresses that they're like, "Whoa, is this where we've ended up?" And it's is it Andrew Tate or who's the guy who just got arrested?
Andrew Tate in Romania, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, in Bucharest. Yeah. But it's like I never heard.
What's going on over there, Paul?
He moved from here anyway, but like. I had no idea that people, like kids were really into it. And I read this article on them and it's like young kids were getting into them. Not that, obviously it's not good to be chauvinist and be toxic, you know. And I don't believe there's a toxic masculinity because I believe true masculinity is not toxic, you know. And it's good to see that. You know, we had J.P. Sears, whom we interviewed, and we've interviewed Robert Malone. And those are just two examples of these very... Mm-hmm. large influencers who have been red pill and who, because they have such a mass audience, they're red pilling others. I think this is going to last. And as long as the world doesn't fall apart or we end up in a nuclear war.
Well, you know, I mean, I think one thing that, you know, the likes of Robert Zeehan would point out is you have to look at the demographics. And frankly, the demographics favor our side because our side is the side of family values, we have the babies.
Yeah.
Okay. Bottom line, we have the babies.
I only have 11 kids.
Yeah. How many grandkids? Whether you're talking conservative Catholics
I think 39 grandkids.
39 grandkids. Oh wow.
You got a great grandkid, kind of, don't you?
I have great grandkids.
Right. Well, no. And I mean that, you know, in the case of Catholics, in the case of you know, Latter Day Saints and Amish,
Pentecostals.
And lots of other people generally who are of a more conservative bent. Are people who tend to have children, okay, demographically. So
they homeschool them too.
So they do. So how does the left counter that? Well, they import lots of illegals. That's what they're trying to counteract this natural trend by bringing in lots of illegals that they hope will tilt the balance. But guess what? A lot of these illegals that are coming in, you know, first generation, yeah, they may be poor and uneducated and incline the ear to the, you know, the sort of the blandishments of the socialists here, but you know, their children are not going to be uneducated, and but they're still going to be, you know, Catholic Latinos or whatever. And so I'm not so sure that they'll be successful at transforming, you know, the country. Now, of course, in a place like China, where they even can control how many children you have, it's easier for the government to maintain ascendancy over even the demographics and, you know, brainwash everybody. Everybody has one child or now two children or whatever the case may be. And there is no differentiation amongst families. There are no subcultures that are more or less conservative. They're all under the thumb of the Communist Party, and that's it. So that's much more difficult. But in a society like ours, where you do have diversity in the good sense of the word, it's well nigh impossible for them to crack down because they can't prevent Benoists from overrunning the state of Wisconsin, right?
From multiplying and filling the earth. Yeah. Huh?
So Gary, how many children and grandchildren and great grandchildren do you have right now?
He doesn't have any grandchildren. Apparently, he's lost count.
I have great grandchildren.
Oh wow!
He does.
Nice.
Yeah. I think 42 or 43 altogether, but I have to count them up.
See, and that has a huge impact. That in itself has a huge impact. I mean, I'm sort of turning this into a statistical thing because for Gary, they're family members. But statistically speaking, they are all nice, good, conservative American people who in their turn will have children and more children. And so, you know, and a few of them may fall by the wayside and turn into liberals, but most of them won't. Okay.
Is that what the statistics show? Like if you're raised in a conservative?
I think so. Yeah. And I mean, the fastest growing, groups in the United States, religious groups in the United States, I was talking about the Amish, for example, they're not really politically active, but still, you know, they're
growing really.
Sure. The Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. Okay. Yeah. Growing very quickly. That's not maybe so much now. It's more of a generational thing. But you see this, people in the home church movement and so
that's
forth
growing
have
too.
Large families too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so that's a miscalculation on their part, the immigration game. Because like you had mentioned, you know, these folks from Southern America, Central America, and, you know, Mexico, they come up here. They're not going to have any part in this, like, transgender madness or whatnot.
Generally not.
They're only going to go so far, but you never know because my concern, I guess, is with the next generation because they do a really good job in indoctrinating. And, you know, I mean, we kind of glossed over a lot of the major threats like the indoctrination, the possible nuclear war. And, you know, we had just done a segment on AI. So this turned out to be a pretty sunny outlook here. We'll see. Way to go, guys, for a change. So thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us on.
And we will do this again next week.